in the first segment, right at the top of the circle, we see the world of the gods. We see heaven opening before our eyes. We see a world of pleasures, a world of delights. We see the gods living in beautiful palaces, among beautiful trees, beautiful gardens, living in a place, in a world, where every wish is instantly gratified. As soon as the desire for something floats or drifts into your mind, however vaguely, however obscurely, there that thing itself is in front of you, in your hands, or in your mouth, or on your body, just as you please, just as you wish. This is how the gods live in heaven. And then, in the second segment, proceeding clockwise, we see the world of the Asuras, the anti-gods, the titans. And these are all fierce and warlike beings. They're usually depicted as stoutly and strongly built, well-muscled, not to say heavily built, and they're engaged in perpetual warfare with the gods. And they're fighting, especially, for the possession of the celestial tree, the Kalpa Taru, or Kalpa Briksha, the magic tree which grants all wishes, which fulfills all desires. So this is the world of the Asuras, the titans, the anti-gods. And in the third segment, carrying on in a clockwise direction, we see the world of Pretas, the world of hungry ghosts. And they're all naked and all horribly deformed. They've got enormously swollen bellies, very, very thin necks, and mouths no bigger than the eye of a needle. And they suffer all the time from ravenous hunger. And they grasp all the time at food and at drink and try desperately to cram it into their mouths. Their needles are mouths. But as they grasp and as they cram, the food and the drink turns into excrement and into liquid fire, so that they cannot eat and they cannot drink. And then, in the fourth segment, right at the bottom of the circle, we see the world of tormented beings. We see hell. And in the middle, we see a fearsome figure sitting enthroned. And this is Yamaraja, the king of death, dark blue in colour, clad in a tiger skin, and surrounded by flames. And as he sits there, he holds in his hand a mirror. This is the mirror of karma. And as beings are dragged before him, beings who have just died, he looks into the mirror. And they are just, as it were, standing there, waiting, while he looks into the mirror. And he sees everything. He sees everything that they've done, everything that they've said, almost everything that they've thought. He sees it all. And he just looks. And if they've done evil, if they've done more evil than good in the course of their preceding life, then he orders them to be taken away and punished, tormented. So therefore, all around in this segment, in this world, in hell or purgatory, because it isn't a permanent state, we see guilty beings suffering various torments. Torments in some cases so terrible that we can hardly bear to think of them, much less still to describe them. And the sound of wailing and roaring and gnashing of teeth and lamentation fills the whole place. And then, in the fifth segment, we see the world of animals, wild animals, domesticated animals, and they are shown all in pairs, male and female. And they are shown living a very peaceful, a very idyllic existence, almost the lion with the lamb. It isn't, in fact, in Tibetan Buddhist art, a very Darwinian picture here. There's no nature red in tooth and claw. You don't even see them preying on one another. And perhaps it's intended to show the animal's life from the animal's point of view, because after all, the animal doesn't worry what's going to happen tomorrow. The animal lives just for today, peacefully, happily. If he's going to be eaten tomorrow, well, he just doesn't know and he doesn't think about it. And then, in the sixth and the last segment, we see the world of men. And here, there are human beings buying and selling, reading, talking, meditating under trees, and finally, being carried as corpses to the cremation ground. So these are the six segments. These are the six worlds. But there's one more important feature of this circle, this whole circle, this third circle, which hasn't yet been mentioned. And that is that in each of the six segments, in each of the six worlds, there appears a Buddha figure of a particular colour. And each Buddha offers to the beings in whose world he appears a particular thing that they need. In the world of the gods, there appears a white Buddha, a pure white Buddha, with face and neck and hands just like snow. And he's holding a musical instrument, an Indian musical instrument called a veena, usually translated as a lute. And he's playing to the gods in heaven a melody, a sweet melody, a penetrating melody, a meaningful melody. He's playing the melody of impermanence, the melody of nothing lasts, the melody of all is evanescent. In the world of the asuras, in the world of the anti-gods, the titans, there appears a green Buddha, a Buddha of a beautiful emerald green. And he holds in his right hand a sword, a flaming sword, a sword all on fire. And this he brandishes or shakes at the asuras as they're fighting. This is the sword of transcendental wisdom. Then, in the world of the pretas, the hungry ghosts, there appears a red Buddha, a Buddha of a beautiful ruby red, and he showers upon the pretas, upon the hungry ghosts, food and drink, clouds of food and drink, which they can actually eat, they can actually consume. Then again, in the world of tormented beings appears a Buddha the colour of smoke, bluish grey, and he regales the beings in hell with amrita, which is nectar or ambrosia, the drink or the food of the gods. And then, in the world of the animals, there appears a blue Buddha, a Buddha of deep, dark blue. And he's showing something to the animals, something which he holds in his hand. And what is he showing to them? What is he displaying to them? He's showing them a book. And finally, there appears in the human world a yellow Buddha, a saffron-coloured Buddha, or if you like, a golden Buddha. And he bears the twin insignia of the spiritual life in ancient India, the begging bowl and the staff with three rings. Now, what do these six Buddhas appearing in the six realms, the six gatis, represent? They represent the introduction into the symbolism of the Wheel of Life of a Mahayanistic element, the element, we may say, of great or absolute compassion. But more about that later on.